This is Dr. Rob Harder with the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, making your world better. What does it take to be an effective nonprofit leader today? What are the biggest challenges? What are the biggest obstacles? How should nonprofits fundraise in an economy that is constantly changing? All of these reasons combined led me to start this show. And it's my hope that through this series, people can learn not only what it takes to be an effective nonprofit organization, but to hear from effective leaders who are successfully making a positive impact in their communities. We hope you enjoy the show, as together we hear how they are making their world better. Hello, podcast listeners. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's so great to have you a part of this Nonprofit Leadership Podcast community. I always appreciate your comments and your feedback, and so glad these guests have been really helpful for you and your leadership development. So again, I'm always open to feedback, ideas, or if you have suggestions for people to come on the show, let me know. You can always email me at rob@robharder.com. Also, as I mentioned before, we have a YouTube channel, so I encourage you to check it out. Just type in Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, and that should pop up on YouTube. And we encourage you to subscribe. And by subscribing, you'll help us get the word out about this great content that we have. And the good news is all the content we have on our regular podcast that's typically just audio is there. Plus, we have additional video content that you're going to really enjoy checking out the YouTube page. So check it out today and subscribe. That would be great. Well, leadership, you know, that's the whole focus of this podcast. And it's been a while, but I've had some guests on the show in the past who had formerly been in the for-profit sector and have switched and moved into the nonprofit sector. Well, today's guest has done just that. Colleen Kelly is my guest. She left a 30-year career in marketing and advertising to enter the nonprofit arena. Now, she now heads up the U.S. base of the international humanitarian agency called Concern Worldwide. Concern Worldwide is actually Ireland's largest humanitarian nonprofit organization, and Colleen heads up this U.S. branch, if you will, of Concern Worldwide. And in this conversation, we'll have some great time just hearing more about what some of the biggest surprises she ran into switching from the for-profit into the nonprofit world. Does she lead differently because she's now in a nonprofit sector job? Or if you're listening and you're in a for-profit job right now, but you're really seriously considering moving into the nonprofit sector, I'm going to ask her that question. Is there any advice you'd pass on to people that are thinking of leaving the for-profit world in order to jump into a mission-driven nonprofit job? So there's a lot of good content in today's interview. There'll be a deep dive into leadership in all aspects. So thanks again for tuning in. Now on to the show. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business. Well, welcome to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. It's great to have Colleen Kelly on the show today. Thanks for joining us, Colleen.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I know in the midst of your busy travel schedule, appreciate you chiming in here and jumping on the show to talk a bit about your experience, both in the for-profit sector as well as the nonprofit sector. And you've had quite a long career already of just lots of leadership experience, which I'm hoping to dive into. As you know, this podcast is really about leadership, and I really want to provide opportunities for my listeners to really learn more about how they can become a better leader. So with that in mind, let's talk about that. Let's give some context first, though. You left a 30-year career in marketing and advertising in order to move to Concern Worldwide, which is Ireland's largest humanitarian organization. For my listeners, you may not know that. So let's start out. Share a little bit what led you to make this decision in the first place.
Well, I, as you said, I was in advertising and marketing 30 years, and I had an amazing career, loved it, was a partner in an ad agency in Los Angeles, was just starting to think about what I was going to do for the last part of my career. And I had always loved working. Even we always took on pro bono accounts at the agency, and I was always the first one to volunteer to do that. One, because I enjoyed it. One, I think it felt good to do good when you were in a career that was not known for being the most philanthropic or giving to others. So I just was truthfully, very lucky that when I was looking around, I had kind of shifted into a couple different marketing roles. And then I was contacted by a few members of the board of Concern that I had known throughout my whole career. They had gone through a couple of CEOs and were really looking for somebody. They had had, actually, the guy who I replaced was a fill-in board member CEO who was trying to retire. So he wanted somebody that could come in. He knew me from 30 years of not working exactly together, but in the same industry. And I was a client and all of that. So he knew what I was capable of. He knew my leadership style. He knew the things I had done in business development, all this kind of stuff that could, you know, be useful and relate to what was needed at Concern. So like I said, if I had sent my resume in, I would have never gotten this job, but I was lucky enough to have a bunch of people who knew what I was capable of and knew the skills that I had that could translate to this role.
Well, I love that. I always loved hearing the story of how people get into the nonprofit sector, you know, whatever stage of their career. So I'm always curious, since you switched, you had such a long career in the for-profit sector, and now, of course, you're in the nonprofit sector. Any surprises, or maybe just share, what are the biggest surprises you've had so far from this move, moving from the for-profit to the nonprofit world?
Yeah, there were lots of surprises, actually. I kind of laughed that, you know, there was some very big skepticism that somebody from the for-profit world could kind of step into this kind of role. I think a lot of the people in the non-for-profit world have been in it their whole lives and careers. So there's not a lot of switching around of people popping in and out of it. On boards there are, but not usually at organizations. So you're viewed with a little bit of skepticism. So you have to prove a lot of things in that way. I kind of laugh and tell people one of the biggest surprises was the different kind of people you're working with, you know, mission-oriented people that care about the mission, care about what they're doing more than just worrying about their career path and their salary and their titles and you know, climbing up the ladder and all that. So there's just kind of a different view of how people show up every day. I also laugh that we used to say in advertising, it was the C students running the A students, because it was all the creative, crazy, kooky people that maybe didn't do so well in school or whatever, but or had careers in art and, you know, different things that weren't super aligned from your degree to your career. And this, I came in and it was not only not C students, it's all A plus students that have always, you know, are super highly educated and, you know, mostly studied this, worked in this, thought about this their whole lives. It's very, very different. You know, advertising kind of felt like it had people coming from all over the place. So it's a very people, academia, process oriented. One other funny thing, I used to see emails that people wrote that were 6 pages long. And I said, oh my God, in advertising, they wouldn't have read past the first bullet point. You know, we used to try and come up with catchy titles so people would actually read your email. So it was just a different kind of person and a different kind of, and you know, that took me having to talk to them differently too.
Sure. Oh, that's funny. Now, great, great kind of analogy. And also, what an interesting experience and what a transition. Okay, now when it comes to leading in your new role, have you found yourself emphasizing a different style of leadership? In other words, are there, in your mind, unique leadership styles that work better now that you're in a nonprofit context versus the for-profit? Or has your leadership style pretty much remained the same?
I mean, I think my leadership style, I mean, my personality is obviously not going to change. My belief in that your greatest asset are people, and you have to connect with people. People have to trust you. You have to build a culture. You have to build a team, all of that. I think I had to learn to be a little more explanatory about things and decisions. People are very conscious of process and how decisions are made and decisions based in research. I mean, it all goes back to that academia thing that you can't just pop off on something. Even if you did it out of your experience and your knowledge, you still have to explain, here's what I'm thinking, here's why I think this is going to work. A little different than the for-profit sector where you just say, we're doing this, go do it.
You're right, okay.
Talk to me when you're done.
Yeah. Well, and then you've had obviously a 30 plus year of leadership in terms of your career so far. As you think about lessons of leadership that you've learned along the way, what are the things that stand out the most to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I try to instill in people, again, what I said before, people are your biggest assets. your team, the team you build, how you give people purpose, how you make them feel like part of something bigger. No matter what you're doing, you've got to do that, because if everyone's just off doing their own thing or doesn't care about the team, doesn't care about the result, doesn't care about what you're trying to do, it's just never going to work. I think, you know, working with kind of younger leaders, a lot of times, I think the hardest thing is teaching them how to teach and delegate, because your best people are the worst delegators, because they always say, I can do it better. I can do it faster if I do it myself. And I always say, well, that's great, but you're never going anywhere then, because you have to teach those underneath you. You have to trust. You have to delegate. And I think that's kind of the thing I've just always felt was super important, was growing new people, growing and teaching and help building a strong group of people around you, above you, alongside you, and below you. You can't have a weak link anywhere there, or you're not going to have a great organization.
That's so well said, you know, in terms of investing in people, and the people are your best asset. Now, we have a lot of listeners to our podcast that are, you know, young leaders moving up, wanting to really, you know, grow in their ability to be a leader. Many of them are, you know, leading organizations that are growing as well. And as they go through these stages of leadership, because you've been part of large organizations, what would be some advice you give specifically to those who are moving into larger roles of responsibility? Anything that, as you've gone through and look back over your career, that you would recommend young leaders to particularly pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, listening. You just always got to be listening to what things are being said to you, what's going on in your industry, in your world, with the people you work with. Again, what I just mentioned before, the teaching and delegating. Again, it's the best people who are the worst at that. And you know, I always said the lazy people are like great at delegating. They just give their work to others. But it's the really good people. And I say all the time, I know it's going to take that extra half an hour that you could have had this done. But if you don't teach somebody else, or you don't get people under you to help you do things and teach them, you're never going to elevate. So I think that's just a thing that it's just got to be reminded all the time. People have to be reminded, like I said, especially the real go-getters that just are like, I could just do this faster. I could make it perfect. And it's like, but if you're the only one who can do it, that's no good to you or anybody else.
We'll be right back. Are you looking for an easy and effective way to boost your nonprofit's donations? Look no further than DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your fundraising efforts, maximizes donations, and simplifies giving for your supporters. With DonorBox, you can create beautiful donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, track donations, and send auto receipts. And the best part? There are no setup or monthly fees and no long-term contracts required. So what are you waiting for? Visit DonorBox.org today to get started. That is DonorBox.org. Are you ready to revolutionize your advocacy efforts and significantly impact policy change? Discover Quorum and level up your advocacy to influence more lawmakers. Quorum is the only unified public affairs platform that empowers nonprofits to map, track, change, and report on the policy landscape, all in one place. Explore how Quorum Grassroots helps nonprofits create compelling campaigns in minutes. The result? Your nonprofit doesn't just participate in the advocacy, it drives it. Quorum, where influence meets innovation. You can learn more at quorum.us. Hey, friends, and thanks so much for listening to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. I want to let you know that I've recently become a professional certified coach. You know, with my nearly 30 years of nonprofit experience, I know firsthand how hard you work as a leader. I also know how important it is to have someone you can call on to get help with the barriers, the leadership challenges that you will face both professionally and personally. And I really want people to thrive, to become all they were meant to become by providing coaching and consulting services. So if coaching is something you've always been interested in, but maybe weren't quite sure what it was all about, I encourage you to reach out. You can go to my website, robharder.com, or just email me at rob@robharder.com. I would be happy to provide a free sample coaching session so you can determine if coaching is for you. All right, thanks again for tuning in. Now back to the show. Well said. And, you know, as you work with leaders yourself, how do you convince the high impact leaders to do that? Like, is it something where, is it a training thing? Is it just leading by example? How have you successfully gotten others to really, that are high performers again, to really delegate well? It's just, yeah, what's been your method?
It's often just a reminder thing to a simple, why are you doing that? Should you be doing that? Should you be spending time on that right now? Or do you think your time would be well spent doing something else? And that's kind of what I try to remind young great leaders is you need to be learning the next thing. And you can't learn the next thing if you're doing this stuff. You need to be thinking about the next thing or coming up with a new or innovative thing or thinking about how you could do something better, faster. But you can't do any of that unless you're building underneath you and getting other people on your team to do stuff, learn stuff, and become great too. So you're never going to become greater unless you make everyone around you greater. And it's like I said, it's often a reminder thing. Why are you doing that? And that you can see in their faces, oh God, you're right. I shouldn't be doing this.
Good. Okay. Well, Concern Worldwide, now you're leading that and you're on the US side of that, even though it's Ireland's largest humanitarian organization. Maybe first just talk a bit about all that you do there at Concern Worldwide and some of the biggest challenges you're facing right now.
Sure. We've been around 56 years, started in Ireland. Kind of a great story about a bunch of people who kind of saw the first televised famine in Biafra. And it was basically a couple, a priest, a minister, a few other friends just kind of said, we can't sit around and do nothing. We need to figure this out. So these people who had no training, no knowledge, had never worked, had never done any of this, figured it out, got aid to Biafra. And from that, 56 years ago, it's grown to 26 countries, about 4,000 people around the world. And, you know, we're kind of a dual mandate organization, humanitarian and development, with the goal of lifting people out of extreme poverty. So I guess the best way to explain it, we do go in when there's disasters, the earthquake in Turkey and Syria, the war in Ukraine, where there's famine, so it's climate, conflict, all the things that cause people to be in dire situations. And, you know, we go to places nobody else goes. So, you know, often people ask us, oh, when the hurricane hits, you know, Texas, are you going there? No, because there's a functioning government in the United States. There's a functioning healthcare system. People are going to get help. We're going to help all the people where there's no one coming, there's no one going to help them, and there's nowhere to go.
Wow. I mean, I love hearing that, how it started and the response. So these just two folks, sounds like they just really want to do something that is so common. I think for a lot of nonprofits, they just have this heart to want to, you know, meet a need that is glaringly out there that no one else is meeting. And so, but obviously they've been successful 56 years. That's really impressive. So maybe you could talk about that. Maybe pieces to this. Number one, what has been their secret sauce? Why do you think they've been so successful? And number two, I have a lot of different leaders on the show that are leading different nonprofit organizations. Some have been international in their scope. Is there anything unique about this international outreach that you do, even though I know you're based in the US? So yeah, maybe talk about that. First of all, what's the secret sauce of Concern Worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, I think the secret sauce are the Irish people. I think, you know, it's an amazing country, amazingly giving country per capita. I think one of the most giving countries in the world. They are not long from famine. There was the famine. People remember it from their relatives, the huge emigration that happened. So I think there's an empathy in the Irish people that, you know, they were, you know, they were taken over by another country. They've had all these things happen to them. So I think there's a kind of empathy that nobody else can have unless you've been in that situation. And I also say the Irish are like, nobody dislikes the Irish around the world. They didn't go around, you know, taking over countries or battling or taking over the world. They were having their issues throughout their history. And I think that's what's made them very powerful in this space and able to do the great work that they do around the world. So while we have tons of people from every nationality working in our countries, most of our staff, 95% of our staff are from the countries where we work. I think that the Ireland ethos is definitely something that really, really makes us a little different.
Okay. And has there been anything that you found since you are doing international work that's been unique because of that? Unique challenges, unique barriers perhaps, because you have such a large scope of so many countries you serve?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think also, most importantly, again, that we're in some of the hardest contexts in the world, the hardest to reach places, the places nobody else goes. I just sat in a meeting yesterday with our kind of conflict advisor about how to go in when there's a conflict and how you do it in a non-political way. And you also have to be sensitive to all the different factions going on, from cultural to political, all of that. It's very complicated. And it's even more complicated by the fact that, like I said, you're probably in a place where it's very dangerous or something horrible has just happened. And people are vulnerable and people are in a situation that is none of their own doing, you know, and it's these forces around them. So I think our work is very complicated. The people who work here are amazing. That our whole thing is that we talk to communities, we listen to communities, we listen to the people there. We don't go marching in going, we know how to fix this, get out of the way. We, you know, we're the experts in all this stuff. We just really use what knowledge we have to work with and listen to people to come up with the best solutions to solve problems.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, I love that approach. You know, here's a question I ask a lot of my leaders, particularly those who are working in international context, because you're often dealing with such difficult challenges. And sometimes the work can be discouraging, right? And because you realize there's so much need out there and you're doing as much as you can, but there's just, the need is very difficult to really comprehend sometimes. Is there certain things with your work that is really giving you hope today? And if so, what would that be for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say what gives me hope, which, as we all know, if you've watched any news lately, there's a lot of reasons not to have hope and feel like every step forward, you know, hunger was going down. A lot of these bad things were finally starting to go down, and then more war, climate change is doing horrendous things, and of course, doing the most bad things to the people who do the least to cause it, with farming, with, you know, drought, with flood, you know, all of that. I guess the hope is that, you know, I look around at the people I work with, and when I go visit the countries where we work, there are people working in some crazy conditions, but they care so much, they work so hard. You know, that earthquake in Turkey, we had 500 people there, that they all woke up to that earthquake and lost houses and lost family members. And they all immediately got up and out on the street and immediately gathered together to work. So I think that, I think our donors, the fact that people still do care and do give money and do give their time to help and keep helping in the face of, sometimes it feels like, is this really going to help? Or there's just so much need in the world, this, you know, why should I do this? And I think seeing the people who are so passionate, our donors, our board, the people who spend a lot of their days trying to help us, that's what has to give me hope every day to do this.
Now, well said on that. And maybe one last question for you and for those who are listening. Perhaps there's somebody who's listening and contemplating moving from a for-profit role like you were into a nonprofit role. Any advice you want to pass on to that now that you're on the other side of it? Anything you'd like to pass on to someone who's making, maybe thinking about that decision?
Well, I think, you know, or everyone should be, we all are looking for great people and people who can bring different skills, people who can bring a different point of view, innovation. So, you know, we have people from different countries. Just even in our U.S. office, I think we have 15 different countries represented. You know, that diversity of thought. A lot of what we do with fundraising is marketing related. It's, you know, social media related. There's all kinds of things that go on within this space that I think skills from other industries could be very much used. CRM systems. Now there's all kinds of different software or grant management systems. So there's all kinds of, you know, IT and technical and software knowledge that is really coming into use really all around the world. So I think people just need to bring what they skills they have and try and think about how that can apply to help solve problems.
Oh, good stuff. Well, I think for my listeners, they'll be interested in finding out a little bit more about you and perhaps Concern Worldwide. So how could they do that? How can they connect with you and learn more about Concern Worldwide?
Sure. Well, our website has tons of great stuff about all the work we do, concernusa.org. And I'm colleen.kelly@concern.net. Very easy. Please contact us or anybody in our organization. We're happy to talk to people or always help, happy to talk. We work with a bunch of organizations around the world, alliances and all of that. So there's opportunities within our organization and all out there. So just contact, find out more, see how you can help.
Excellent. Well, Colleen, again, thanks for taking time out to share all that you're doing and good work. I mean, I'm impressed with what you're doing and the impact Concern Worldwide is having is pretty impressive. So thanks for all you do and thanks for taking time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you.
Hey, friends. Well, I wanted you to know that this podcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to other podcasts. I also want to encourage you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with others. This will actually help us get this great content out to more nonprofit leaders just like you. You can also join the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast community, find other resources and interviews of past guests, all on my website, nonprofitleadershippodcast.org. Well, thanks again for listening. And until next time, keep making your world better. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. Go to YouTube and look up Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. We'll see you there. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business.